Welcome back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. So let's talk for a moment about what could be called the failed promise of American higher education. And I say that because shortly after taking office in 2009, President Obama made his first speech to a joint session of Congress. And in it, he proposed a huge increase in the number of students earning, quote, quality degrees.
We will provide the support necessary for all young Americans to complete college and meet a new goal. By 2020, America will once again have the highest proportion of college graduates in the world. That is a goal we can meet.
Obama's goal, along with the introduction of new technologies, online learning, things like that, they led educators to predict that higher education was on the edge of major change. However, nearly a decade later, the former president of Harvard University says higher education has not stepped up to the challenge, and in fact, very little change has occurred. He blames the inertia on universities, government officials, and possibly even students themselves. Derek Bok was president of Harvard University from 1971 to 1991, acting president from 2006 to 2007, and he lays out the dilemma faced by colleges today in his new book, The Struggle to Reform Our Colleges, and he joins us now in the studio. President Bok, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. Well, first of all, your book does start off with this challenge that President Obama laid out to the nation in 2009. Did you think it was the right challenge at the time? Did we need to see a lot more young people going to college?
Yes, I think it was certainly a very noble idea, and it had even greater benefits than President Obama spelled out. He was mostly interested in the contribution to a growing economy and a competitive economy you would get if you had many more college graduates. But having college graduates also extends opportunities to a much larger number of people to experience the American dream and live more prosperous, fulfilling lives. It also makes people better off in many ways. They're happier. They are less likely to have substance abuse or commit suicide. They vote more often. They are on welfare less often. They educate their children better. They don't have as much crime and so forth. So there are great benefits outside of the economy that you would get if you were able to meet this goal.
Now, it's interesting because the president sort of roughly said that the goal was to have 60% of young people between the ages of 25 to 34 having attained a college degree by the year 2020, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not there yet, but there has been some progress. I'm looking at a report from Pew, and it seems like, for example, the total has gone from 41% to 48%. So there's still some way to go. But what do you make of how higher education and American colleges and universities responded to the president's challenge? Did they take it up with enthusiasm?
Yes, there was great enthusiasm from college presidents and college leaders. There was enthusiasm from the business community, I think from the public as a whole. So everything seemed really poised for a major advance.
But it didn't happen, or hasn't fully happened yet.
It hasn't fully happened, no.
And so why? So why...
You mentioned it's gone up, and yes, it's gone up. On the other hand, the percentage had been going up for decades prior to his announcement. So the amount of improvement is not all that great.
Right. I mean, Pew says that more progress would need to be made over the next 4 years than we've made in the past 7 years if the goal is to be reached.
Yes.
And right now the United States is, what, 10th in the world regarding young people 25 to 34 completing college degrees, something like that?
Yes, and that may be on the high side. I mean, most estimates are closer to maybe 11 or 12.
Okay, so then, I mean, your entire book takes up this challenge. But if you could just describe to us in your mind what are the big roadblocks? What are the challenges keeping us from attaining this goal?
Well, one of them is that it's simply very hard to educate the students who would have to be added to the ranks of college graduates if we were to meet this goal. Most students who have gone to good high schools and have academic aptitude already go to college and graduate. To increase that number by the percentage that President Obama had in mind, you would have to bring in a lot of students who are not well prepared for college, who've gone to financially challenged high schools that are exist in troubled neighborhoods with high rates of crime and drug use and single parent families. And we simply do not know enough to educate a lot of those students successfully. And so that's one problem. The second problem was predictably a problem of money. The colleges that would have to educate most of the additional students are community colleges, which receive the smallest amount of funding per student of any segment of higher education. And President Obama offered to propose that they get a modest increase in federal funds. Congress did not go along with that. So you had the toughest students to educate being directed to the most financially challenged schools. And predictably, we haven't made the progress that we hoped.
But in your book, you point out how in times past, for example, after the Second World War, higher education did meet the challenge, right? Because you write how after World War II, if I remember correctly, that basically there was such a great demand that the United States was opening one new college somewhere every week.
Sure.
So what's stopping the sort of modern day version of that kind of growth, nimbleness? I don't know what you call it. Response from higher education.
Well, there's an enormous difference between increasing the number and proportion of young people who go to college when only 5% were going to college and getting degrees before World War II. And then you had 4 years of pent-up demand.
Yeah.
And then you had lots and lots of people with a growing economy who saw that a college education would benefit them. And these were students who went to good high schools and had a good education, were pretty well prepared. Very different from the audience that you would have to attract to meet Mr. Obama's goals.
Mm. But one would think that American colleges and universities ostensibly would be the place where we could generate the best, newest ideas that we might apply quickly to this problem, right? I mean, by definition, the greatest minds should be at these places.
Yes.
But I'm wondering, is there something about modern-day academic bureaucracy that prevents the kind of response that we might want?
Well, I think the real problem has to start with the recognition of how difficult it is. After all, it's not just the colleges. The schools have been wrestling with this problem and making very little progress for the last 40 years. So it is hard, and we simply don't know enough about how to motivate students, who initially don't care that much about education, are not their background doesn't predispose them to be very disciplined in the classroom. Often there are a whole host of problems in reaching them successfully that are very difficult. And they're very difficult whether you're talking about primary school, high school, or the college level. And we are constantly experimenting and trying to find better ways of educating them. But the rate of progress of finding new ideas to tackle this problem is unfortunately slow.
But what about the actual quality of the educations received at colleges and universities? Because you point in the book, or you say in the book, that you don't think students are exerting pressure on universities or adequate pressure on universities to deliver quote unquote quality education.
I think that's part of the problem, that students are very interested in grades. They talk to their professor much more often about grades than they do about ideas, but they're not so interested in working hard. One of the most disturbing trends that we have, and it goes all the way back to the 1960s, is a 40% drop in the amount of time that students say they devote to their college studies. And if there's one thing we know is that the learning you get out of college is directly proportional to the amount of work that you put in. Now, some very bright students put in less than others, but for everyone, if they do more work, they get more out of it. So that when you lose 40% of study time, and when a lot of that study time is increasingly taken up with multitasking through texting and Facebook and exchanging messages back and forth, that cuts into the quality of the time that they do spend on their studies. So you put all that together, in fairness, I should say, we don't have really definitive measures about how much students are learning. We have a lot of bits and pieces of evidence, and they all point in one direction, and that is that, if anything, the quality of education in terms of the amount students learn has probably drifted downward rather than upward in the last 40 years.
Okay. Mr. Bach, forgive me, but I have to say that some of what you say it challenges me a little bit, because I think that a lot of students, a lot of young people would say, well, actually, okay, maybe I spend a little less time in front of my books, but that's because I have to have a job, or I'm looking for an internship, or the nature of how we learn is changing, and it's not correlating it strictly to study time isn't necessarily the best way to measure the quality of the educational experience that someone's receiving.
Well, that's very nice, what you say, but although admitting that the evidence is less than definitive, because we don't have as good measures of student learning as possible, the measures we do have suggest that the amount students are actually learning, however they're spending their time, has gone down. In other words, compared with other countries, we are below average in the performance of students on international tests of verbal literacy, numeracy, problem solving. The few comparisons we have about how much students are learning now compared with a decade or two decades ago all point downward. And certainly employers are complaining a lot about the quality of the college graduates that they're hiring. So there's a good deal of evidence that however the students are spending their time or think they're spending their time, they're not learning as much as we would like.
Interesting. So in the book, you talk about some potential solutions to the challenges faced. And let's spend a little bit of time talking about that. For example, experimental colleges like Western Governors University.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, Western Governors University is an entirely online institution. Caters a lot to people who had some college, but not all college. Provides degrees in a few selected, largely vocational subjects. It lets students study at their own pace. It's all done by computer, and they can do it as fast as possible. It gives them credit for skills, not just grades in school, but skills that they've learned in other ways, in the Army or on a job or something. And therefore, it's a much more efficient way of getting them through and to a degree for less money and less time if they're really determined to do it.
Hmm. Well, so on that note, aside from experimental colleges like Western Governors University, do you think there's greater hope in the expansion of online courses? Or was that going to just exacerbate the problems you were talking about earlier?
Well, online colleges, unfortunately, have, if anything, higher dropout rates than going to college. I mean, you get a lot of support to stay in college by the fact that you have friends and you have groups that you're with, and there's a kind of support mechanism there plus advisors and counselors and human beings who keep you going. You don't have that if you just sit in front of your computer. So it takes a good deal of determination. in order to finish. So if you look at these highly publicized and hyped courses we call MOOCs, massive online courses that are delivered by computer, they're marvelous things, and it's a very interesting development. But still, the completion rates are probably under 10%, which is considerably worse than college performance. And there is some indication that poorer students and minority students do worse on online courses than others. So there are some real problems to be overcome before technology offers the solution, we hope.
Well, in the last couple seconds that we had, if there's, you know, if there's one reform that you think would be highly effective and could be achievable in the next couple of years in higher ed, what would it be?
I think there are a lot of good ideas circulating around about how to solve these problems of completion and quality. They haven't been tested, which is a great handicap, because most good ideas, when you test them rigorously, don't work out in education. I think we need to have a much more vigorous program of research and evaluation, much as you have in medicine or in the space program or many other areas where you have a lot of testing going on, so that new ideas have to go through that and then get into the bloodstream and bring about improvement. If we had something more like that, the rate of progress would be increased.
Yeah. Well, Derek Bok is the former president of Harvard University, president emeritus. His new book is The Struggle to Reform Our Colleges. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Not all my pleasure.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.